Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is October 23rd. We are in Shmuel Aleph, and we're in Perek Yuches, chapter 18. And we are up to Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Last time we developed Shaul and Yohanan, how they were dealing with David rising in popularity and in success. How Yonasan became very attached to David, seeing in David the ability for himself to continue to grow close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Shaul, initially being very happy about David's success, but then with the women's statement that appeared as if they were giving greater praise, right, importance to David than to him, he began to be jealous of David. We described how Shaul was dealing with not only Hashem having left him, but replacing Hashem's close connection with him to a ruach, with a ruach ra, an evil spirit from Hashem, which made it very difficult for Shaul. So here, now we're going to have the beginning of this situation where Shaul goes back and forth between wanting to get rid of David and at the same time thinking very highly of David, and it's very hard for Shaul, and we're going to trace that now for the next several prakim. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Vayhi mimacharas, it was the next day. Vatitzvach ruach Elokim ra'ah el Shaul. And there was an evil spirit of Hashem on Shaul. You see, the Navi prefaces this by telling us that Shaul had an evil spirit. Had Shaul not had this evil spirit, he would have been able to deal with his jealousy of David, but with the evil spirit, it was too much. Now the word Vayisnabe literally means he prophesied. It comes from the word Navi, which means to have prophecy. However, Chazal, our sages explain, and Rashi says it over here, that it means that he acted in a way that appeared to have lost his wits. Because a Navi, when he gets a prophecy, either it's when he's sleeping, or if he's awake, during the time of the prophecy, he does not appear to have his wits about him when a Navi receives prophecy. We've described this in the past, that a prophecy is not wishy-washy. A prophecy is very clear, a very clear-sighted, very clear-minded experience. But the physical expression of the person when receiving prophecy appears like he's lost his wits. So Shaul here, with the Ruach Ra'ah, this evil spirit from Hashem, it caused him to appear like he had lost his wits. He didn't seem to have normal control of his body. The David Minagain Biyado, and David was playing in his hand, playing his instrument, Kiyom Biyom, like every day, when Shaul would have these bouts. The Achanis Biyad Shaul, and the spear, or the dagger, was in the hands of Shaul. He was holding the sword or a dagger. Vayatel Shaul es Achanis, and Shaul took the dagger. Vayomer, and he said, Akeba David uvakir, I will strike David and into the wall, which means I'll strike David and I'll hit him so hard the blade will go through David and into the wall. Vayisov David mipanav, and David moved from in front of him pa'amayim, twice, which means that David didn't realize that Shaul was trying to attack him, and nevertheless, as Shaul lunged for him, David moved on his own, and David never even realized that Shaul was trying to attack him. We'll see later that when he does realize Shaul is trying to attack him, he runs away. Here, he has no idea that Shaul is trying to attack him, and David is intent upon his instrument. Shaul might have snuck up behind him, whatever it is, but Shaul came at him in a way that David never saw it happening, and it just so happened he moved at the moment that Shaul lunged, and it happened twice.
Is this a spear he's holding?
It's either a sword or a dagger, something like that, I'm not
okay.
Sure. Vayira Shaul milifnei David, and Shaul was fearful of David, ki hayah Hashem imo, for Hashem was with him, umeim Shaul sar, and from Shaul Hashem had removed himself. Shaul saw very clearly because he tried it twice. One time might have been a coincidence, But he tried it twice, and both times David moved out of the way on his own. So Shaul realized that Hashem is with David and not with Shaul, and that caused great fear for Shaul. So Shaul now knows that he's not going to be able to kill David. Vayesirehu Shaul me'imo, Shaul removed David from before him. Vayesimehu lo star aleph, and he made him an officer of 1,000 men, meaning one of the high-ranking officers in the army. Vayetzei vayavo lifnei ha'am, and he went out and he came back in front of the nation, which means he led the nation into battle, and he returned. He went back and forth into battle with the nation leading the soldiers. Vayehi David l'chol derachav maskil, and David in all his ways was successful. Hashem imo, and Hashem was with him. Vayar Shaul ashehu maskil ma'od, and Shaul saw that David was very successful. Vayagar mipelnav, and he was even more fearful. This is a stronger word than the word vayira. He was extremely fearful now of David, realizing that David's star is rising very rapidly, and Shaul is powerless to stop David. V'chol Yisrael v'Yehuda ohev es David, and all the Jews and Yehuda, the tribe of Yehuda specifically, loved David. Ki hu yotzei v'aval lifneim, for he went out and came back in front of them. He was leading the nation in battle. So what is Shaul to do now? Shaul realizes he can't defeat David, and David is very quickly becoming more and more of a personality, more and more known, more and more of a leader. What does Shaul do? Pasuk Yizayin, verse 17. Vayomer Shaul al David, and Shaul said to David, Hinei biti hagedola Meirav. Behold, here is my oldest daughter, Meirav. That's her name. Osa etein lecha li'isha. I will give her to you as a wife. Achayei li levenchayel, however, be for me as a warrior. V'ilachem milchamos Hashem, and fight the battles of Hashem. I want you to fight the battles, and I will make you my son-in-law. I will give you my daughter Meirav as a wife. V'shaul amar, Shaul said to himself, Al tihi yadi bo, my hand will not be against him. U'sihibo yad plishtim, let the hand of the plishtim be against him rather than me. So I will send him out to battle. Let the plishtim kill him off. Vayomer David al Shaul, David says to Shaul, Mi anochi, who am I? Umi chayai, and what is my life? Mishpachas avi b'Yisrael, the family of my father amongst the Jews. What good am I? Ki yechasan lamelech, that I should be a son-in-law to the king. I don't deserve that. Vayhi be'es teis es Meirav bas Shaul, David. It was at the time when it was time to give Meirav, the daughter of Shaul, to David. They had appointed a time when Shaul would give the hand of Meirav in marriage to David. V'hi nitna la'adriel ha-mecholasi li'isha, she was given instead to Adriel ha-mecholasi, that's his name, as a wife. So in the end, Meirav was not given to David as a wife, rather she was given to Adriel as a wife. We have to, of course, understand what happened over there. Let's continue, though. Vatehav Michal bas Shaul as David. And Michal, the daughter of Shaul, loved David. Vayagidu l'Shaul, and they told Shaul that Michal loved David. Vayishar hadavar ve'inav, and this thing was good, was straight in his eyes. He liked that. He liked that Michal took a liking to David. Vayomer Shaul. Shaul said, Etnena lo, I will give her to him. Usihilo l'mokesh, let her be to him as a stumbling block. Usihibo yad plishtim, let the hand of the plishtim be against him. In other words, the same tactic that he used for Meirav, he wants to use with Michal. Let David have the hand of Michal in marriage, but in order to do that, he's going to have to do something very difficult, and perhaps the plishtim will kill him. Vayomer Shaul el David, Shaul said to David, Bishtayim hischatein bihayom, with two of my daughters, tischatein bihayom, you will become a son-in-law to me today. Which means, obviously, he's not marrying both daughters, but it means that there's a second chance over here. You can be my son-in-law. Vayitzav Shaul esavadav, Shaul commanded his servants, Dabru el David balot, speak to David in private. Lamar saying, in other words, make this something that is not a public discussion. Say this to David as if you were doing this on your own without my instructions. Hinei chavetz b'cha hamelech, the king is fond of you. B'chol avadav ahibuchan, all his servants love you. V'ata, and now hischatein b'melech, you should become the son-in-law of the king. So he enlisted the help of his servants to talk David into wanting to marry Michal. Vayidabru avdei Shaul beozei David, and the servants of Shaul spoke in the ears of David etzadvarim oile, these things. Vayomer David, David said to them, Hanikla veineichem haischatin b'melech, is becoming the son-in-law of the king something light in your eyes? You think this is a simple matter? Just go ahead, become the son-in-law of the king. Ve'anochi ish rosh v'nikla, I am a poor and degraded man. Who am I to go become the son-in-law of the king? I'm not worthy of that. Vayagidu avdei Shaul lo lemar, the servants of Shaul said, told Shaul, saying, Kadvarim o'ela dibra David, these are the words that David said. So David is declining. Vayomer Shaul said, Ko somulu David, so you should say to David, Ein chevetz ha-melech b'mohar, the king is not interested in a dowry. Ki b'me'a arlos plishtim, what the king wants as a dowry, or rather as a way of earning the hand of Michal in marriage, is 100 arlos, that's 100 foreskins of the plishtim. Lina came be hamelech, to take revenge against the enemies of the king. V'shol chashav, Shaul was thinking, v'hapilas David biyad plishtim, that to have David fall in the hands of the plishtim. V'yagidu avadav leDavid es advarim oelech, and his servants told David these things. V'yishar davar be'enei David, and the thing was straight or good in the eyes of David. Lishchatein b'melech, to become the son-in-law of the king. It wasn't that many days. There weren't that many days. David went about doing this immediately. He went out to go fulfill his end of the deal, which would be to bring back Mea Arlos, 100 foreskins of the Plishtim. Vayakam David got up. Vayelech huva anashav, he and his men went. Vayach by Plishtim, and they struck against the Plishtim. Masayim is 200 men. Vayavei David es Arlos sehem, and David brought their foreskins. Vayimalum lamelech, and he filled them to the king, which means he fulfilled his end of the deal. Mischatein b'melech, to become the son-in-law of the king. Vayitem lo Shaul es Michal bito liisha, and this time Shaul does follow through, and he gives his daughter Michal to David as a wife. Vayar Shaul saw vayeda, and he knew ki Hashem im David, that Hashem was with David. Umichal bas Shaul ahevasu, and that Michal, the daughter of Shaul, loved him. Vayosef Shaul leiro mipnei David od, and Shaul continued to be even more fearful of David. Vayishol oyeves David kol hayamim, and Shaul was the enemy of David all the days. Vayetsu sare plishtim, and the officers of plishtim went out. Vayhimi they say something, and was when they came out, in other words, they came out to do battle with the Jews. Sochal David mikol avdei Shaul, so David was the most successful of all the servants of Shaul in defeating the plishtim. Vayikar shmo ma'od, and his name became very precious, very esteemed. Right, that's right. Okay, so let's give a general overview of what we just read, and then point out the difficulties that we need to cover. So Shaul is becoming fearful of David, and the Navi continuously mentions that, and it becomes more and more of a fear as each attempt at getting rid of David fails, and David continues to become more and more successful. Shaul's fear of David grows. So first, Shaul tries to kill David on his own by hand. He sees that doesn't work, that Hashem is protecting David. Then he says, "Let the Plishtim do it." So he contrives a plan, whereas David will become his son-in-law through Merav and fight the battles of Hashem against the Plishtim, and in so doing he'll be killed by the Plishtim. He's about to give Merav to David, the time comes, and instead Merav marries Adriel. Then Michal loves David, so Shaul likes that, let's try again. And this time he makes it a more unusual type of deal. First of all, he enlists the help of his servants to try to talk David into marrying Michal. David declines. Then he says to them, tell him that I'll let him marry her, not for money, but for the arlos of the plishtim, the foreskins. David likes that idea. He goes into battle. He fulfills his end of the deal. He marries Michal, and Shaul is even more fearful of David. Now, we have to understand the progression of what is happening over here. First of all, if Shaul saw that in attacking David, we already said he attacked David when he had a Ruach Ra. It was an evil spirit upon him and he attacked David. So, but he saw, even in that state, that Hashem is clearly protecting David. Well, if Hashem is protecting David, why does Shaul think that it will work to get rid of David at the hands of the Plishtim? If it won't work when I try to attack him, why will it work if I send him to war and the Plishtim attack him? Why should one... It's not like Shaul is saying the Plishtim are better at killing people than I am. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that I see Hashem is with David. That's what I see. So I'll send him out to war. Well, if Hashem is with David, he'll protect him in front of Shaul, he'll protect him against the Plishtim. What difference does it make what danger you try to put David in? If Hashem is protecting David, Hashem is protecting David. So why? What does Shaul think? He must feel that there is some advantage to sending David out to war that he didn't have when he attacked him personally. That's one. Two, why does Shaul incorporate his daughter Merav into this whole thing? What is the value of that? This, it doesn't begin with a line that Merav loved David, unlike with Michal. It just says he'll give Merav to David. What is the reason for wanting to incorporate Merav into this whole thing? Just send him out to war. It wasn't like David was declining going out to war. David was leading the people into battle anyway. So why does he need to throw in, and I'll give you Merav as a wife? You would think he doesn't want to give Merav as a wife to David, because if you give Merav as a wife to David, you are legitimizing David more than anything. If your whole goal over here is to distance David, you don't want him to become the prince. That makes him even more legitimate as an heir to the throne. Wouldn't you want to keep him away from your family? He's already connected to Yonah's son. So what is he gaining over here by adding Merav into the mix? Whatever, however we're going to answer that question, we then have to answer, well, why in the end does Merav not marry David? In the end, Merav marries Adriel. What happened? I thought Shaul wanted Merav in the mix. Well, maybe Shaul didn't want Merav in the mix. So which one is it?
Yes.
Then Michal loves David. All of a sudden, Michal loves David. What happened? All of a sudden, Michal becomes enamored with David. And Michal didn't love David before? Evidently not. What happened all of a sudden here? Michal loves David. The word gets back to Shaul. He likes that. Good. I'm glad Michal loves David. I'll use her now instead of Merav to get David. What happened? Why? What triggered Michal to love David? The similar question we asked with Yonasan. All of a sudden, Yonasan loves David. We explained this last time. What happened over there? What happened over here? All of a sudden, Michal saw a picture of David and thought he's just a very handsome guy.
Maybe she got it from Yonasan.
Okay, but has to understand why at this juncture
right,
here.
Right. Okay.
And then Shaul says, okay, now I'll use Michal to get David. Well, understand, you used Merav to try to kill David. It didn't work, or somehow it didn't work, and then you pass Merav on to somebody else. So what are you trying now? What is the new tactic? We went from Shaul trying to kill him himself to get David killed at the hands of the Plishtim using Merav, to get David killed at the hands of the Plishtim using Michal. What's the difference in using Merav and using Michal? Now there's a new tactic. What's new about it? And what is his business with the Arlos? I mean, that is one of the strangest, commandments that a king issues. And David, where he first was given the idea of marrying Michal, David says, who am I? You think it's so simple to marry, to become the chassan of the king? I should go and marry. Who am I? So David is not interested. He feels he's not worthy. Then Shaul comes up with this brilliant, very strange command of bring me the Arlos Plishtim. David says, ooh, that's a good idea. I like that. Fine. Money, forget it. I'm in. I'll do it. So all of a sudden, he likes it. That's a good wedding gift. I mean, what happened over here? And then David, he doesn't lose any time. Right away, goes out there, kills those Plishtim, brings out the Arlos. He gets Michal as a wife. Now this time Shaul does follow through and gives him Michal. And Shaul is now continues to be afraid of David. It's a very, very funny sequence of events over here. So we have to go through this now, step by step, to try to get a sense of what's happening. Hopefully we'll be able to fill in all the pieces. If we can't fill in every single detail, at least to get a general overview of most of the details, so we have a sense of what's happening in this very strange parak. Did I miss any questions? Yeah.
Well, I have one question that's back in chapter 17, around verse 25. I saw it that he had been told that whoever killed Goliath was going to probably give the daughter, but when I read it again now, I'm not sure that that's what Shaul said or if that's what the people were just assuming Shaul would
Good.
Do, but it did refer to the king giving his daughter.
The Gemara seems to say that guarantee was being fulfilled now with Merav, but it doesn't sound that way in the Pesukim. In the Pesukim it sounds more like this is a new idea,
yeah.
Right? That's what it sounds like. So now the discussion before with the Plishtim, there was never a formal offer. It didn't say that the king is formally offering his daughter to David. However, there may have been a general proclamation. Whoever kills him gets my daughter. There may have been a general proclamation like that, in which case David is owed a daughter of the king. Right. But nevertheless, David doesn't seem to feel that it's coming to him.
No, that's why I'm puzzled.
Okay, good.
Do we consider Merav as being betrothed, and therefore that's almost like a marriage, and now that's broken, or it's just a thought that is coming forward?
There is a discussion in the Gemara whether Merav was already had kiddushin, already was betrothed to David, in which case her marriage to Adriel would have been a sin.
Right.
She would have been a married woman now going off with another man with Adriel. The Gemara describes. It's a very technical discussion, which is really beyond the scope of tonight's class, but describes a machlokas, a dispute between Shaul and David in Torah, in Gemara, a halachic dispute about a technicality in the betrothal as to whether it was valid or invalid. And Shaul ruled that it was invalid, and David ruled that it was valid. So that according to David, he was actually married to Merav, but according to Shaul, he was not. In that particular technical dispute, the halacha follows what Shaul said over there, in which case she was not betrothed to David, and it was permitted, therefore, to marry her off to Adriel. But it's a very technical discussion in the Gemara. What was the nuance that they were arguing about, and which way it went? Now, let's begin with the biggest question of them all, which I think is the key to understanding the whole parak. If Shaul attempted to kill David and he was unsuccessful, and he recognizes he was unsuccessful because Hashem intervened, he doesn't believe that it's a coincidence. He's, after all, he is Shaul. He doesn't delude himself into thinking that it was just coincidence that David happened to move out of the way twice. Shaul is fully aware, he says it himself, he's fully aware that Hashem is protecting David. He knows it. So if he's aware of that, and Shaul is no fool, then why does he feel that it might be better to send him into war and he'll get killed there? Why does he think sending him to war is any better? If when I attacked him it didn't work, why the Plishtim are any better? So it seems to me that the difference between Shaul and the Plishtim is, let's read it very carefully. In Pasuk Yud Beis 12, Vayera Shaul milifnei David. Shaul was feared from before David when he saw that David avoided his attack twice. Ki haya Hashem imo, for Hashem was with David. Now, had it stopped there, I'd be fine. But that's not what it says. Ki haya Hashem imo, for Hashem was with him, with David. Umeim Shaul sar. But from Shaul, Hashem had left, had forsaken him. It seems to me that Shaul realizes that he will never kill David, because Hashem is with David, and he's not with Shaul. It's not just that he's not with Shaul. He left Shaul. He has forsaken Shaul. So that it's not simply that David has Hashem on his side and I don't. It's that David has Hashem on his side and Hashem is specifically pushing me away. There's a ruach ra, there's an evil spirit against Shaul. It's worse than just that Hashem is with David. So Shaul realizes, although it may happen that David will get killed, but it won't. I will never be able to do it. And therefore I need to figure out a different way for David to be in danger and possibly be killed. But it's still not sufficient, because if Hashem is with David, that means Hashem wants David to survive. So what is Shaul's plan over here? He knows that he lost the right, Shaul lost the right to being king. He knows that Hashem has empowered someone else. As Shmuel said to him back in the story of Amalek, Hashem has given the royalty to your friend who is better than you. So Shaul knows there is someone who is better than me that Hashem is going to give the Malchus, is going to give the throne to. He knows that. And all indications are pointing to David. With everything. With the story with Goliath, with the whole thing with the battles, with Hashem being with him. David seems to be not just the most likely candidate, but the only candidate. He seems to be the man. So, if that's true, then whether Hashem has forsaken Shaul and sent him to the Plishtim, but why would Hashem allow David to be killed? David is clearly Hashem's rising star, and he's protecting David. So why would he be killed? So, it would seem then that Shaul is not just trying to find another way to get David killed other than his own attempts, which he knows his own attempts are going to fail. He's trying to find another way of getting David killed. But it would seem that in addition to that, Shaul is trying to get David to deserve to be killed. Not just put him in a place where people will try to kill him. I'm trying to kill him and I'm not successful. So I'll put him in front of the Plishtim. The Plishtim will also try to kill him. Great. But that's not good enough. It's going to have to be some plan where Shaul feels that David will act in a manner which will deserve to be killed. That Hashem will not protect David. Well, how's that going to happen? How will Hashem not protect David? Well, let's look at it from Shaul's perspective. Shaul is saying, I am king. I'm going to lose my kingdom. I know that. Hashem is going to give my throne to somebody else. That somebody else is without question David. And David's star is rising. But right now, I'm king. David is not king. David is a servant. He's not king. If David were to overstep his authority, if David were to act as if he were king already, mm-hmm. If David were to assume certain privileges that are reserved for the throne, then David will be a morid b'malchus. David will be a traitor. And then he will deserve to be killed. It's not just, I'll put him in the line of fire, but I want to give him the ability to overstep his authority. David has already demonstrated that it has not gotten to his head. He said, I am your servant, the son of your servant Yishai. Yonasan cleaved to David because Yonasan saw that humility in David. That's what we saw last week. So Shaul is saying, let me figure out a way of both putting him in the line of fire, but also giving him reason to go to overstep what he really should be doing. To do something out of line. And the way I'm going to do that is with offering him my daughter in marriage. By offering Merav in marriage, so then he is putting David in a position where David is being artificially propelled beyond even what he already is. David's already being propelled very high. Everybody loves him. He's very successful. Yonasan loves him. Yonasan gives him the princely garb from before. You know, Yonasan is giving. There's clearly David his star is rising very quickly. But he's not king yet. and he's not the prince. He's only very friendly with the prince. So Shaul says, I'm gonna accelerate the process. Let him be too much. Let him get beyond himself. Let him go even too fast for the pace he's going. So that maybe he'll do something that he shouldn't do. Perhaps he will go too far. Perhaps it will get to his head. And then, when the Navi said, Shmuel said, I will give the kingdom to someone better than you, well, he won't be better than me, because I made a mistake. If he makes a mistake, well, then we're in the same boat. So let's try that. So the way he does it is, he sends David out to war to earn Merav's hand in marriage. And David, for Merav anyway, David is willing to do that, although he says, "Who am I to become the son-in-law of the king?" But he doesn't say no. And then in Pasuk Yotes, verse 19, when the time comes to give Merav to David, on a technicality, Shaul gives her to somebody else, to Adriel. So now, what would be David's reaction to that? Here, David doesn't believe that he deserves all this, but he's rising. Great. Well, even a person who feels he doesn't deserve it, once he's tasted a certain measure of
honor,
right, of status, when you cut that status down, that's tough. That's hard for anybody to handle. The Gemara tells us in Menachos that at the end of Menachos that there was a that describes what happens when a person has a certain status and then you give it over to somebody else. Someone else takes it. It's very, very hard for the person who once had that status. I think about this frequently when I think about the executive branch of the United States government, which is when it was put into practice in the late 18th century, that was a new idea to have a revolving leader. It's a very difficult thing. Someone who was in charge of the country and is no longer in charge of the country. It's not an easy thing to live with. That everybody used to stand up when you walked into the room and they played Hail to the Chief. And then, now, you're just a regular citizen. Maybe you're more famous and more well known, but you're no longer calling the shots. It's not easy to step down. It's not an easy thing. And Shaul offers, it's tantalizing. You're going to become the son-in-law of the king. And in the last moment, on a technicality, which David disagreed with, Shaul moves his daughter off to somebody else, hoping that David will now react. Maybe he will get angry. Maybe he will curse the king. Maybe he'll be upset with Hashem. Maybe, who knows? Something, anything, that David will prove that he's not worthy of being the king. But there's nothing. There's no reaction on the part of David. It just says, immediately after that, the next step is, Vatehav Michal bas Shaul as David. Michal, daughter of Shaul, loved David. Why does Michal all of a sudden love David? What happened? So it seems to me that what happened is very similar to what happened when Yonasan all of a sudden loves David. Why does Yonasan all of a sudden love David? Because David's reaction to being asked, do you come from Peretz? Which means, are you fit to be king? And David's reaction is, at the end of the last chapter, Vayomer David, Ben Avdecha Yishai Beisalachmi, I'm the son of your servant, Yishai Beisalachmi. We described last time, clearly David says it with humility. It's not just the words that he says, but the tone of voice, the body language, clearly indicates that David looks at himself as a servant of Shaul, that he does not see himself as king, he does not see himself as the main authority, he sees himself as nothing but a servant of Shaul. We pointed out at the time that this reaction was greater than even Shaul and Yonasan realize, because they don't realize that David has already been anointed king. He was anointed king, but he recognizes now is not the time, and right now I am nothing but a servant, and that's the way he acts, that's the way he speaks, That's the what he projects. Yonah's son sees that and immediately says, this is a person I want to be close to. This is a person I need to grow with. It seems to me Michal has the same reaction. Here, David was put in a position where he could have been the son-in-law of the king, and a machlokas ensues, a disagreement in the base medrash. Was it a good betrothal? Wasn't it? No. Shaul says it wasn't. David says it was. Shaul says, well, it wasn't, and we rule this way, and gives her to somebody else. David, although he has been disagreed with in learning, you're allowed to disagree with the king when it comes to Torah. That you can do Torah, you can disagree with anybody. So, he, although that's the case, David had a different opinion, and David now went from being just around the cusp of becoming the son-in-law of the king, and now he's not. There's no reaction. David is just David. He's not angry. He's not yelling. He's not bitter. He's not resentful. Okay. It's not what Hashem wanted. Onward. Michal sees this and she says, that's the man I want to marry. That's the man I want to be my husband. I want to marry to that man. Rebbetzin Kamenetsky, Rosh Shmuel Kamenetsky's wife, Rebbetzin Temi Kamenetsky, told my sister, when my sister was dating, she told her that when you're looking for a husband, the two main qualities you want in a husband are that he's generous and that he doesn't get angry. Those are the two main things you're looking for in a husband. That's what Rebbetzin Temi Kamenetsky told my sister when my sister was dating. So here, Michal sees that David goes through this and does not react. Michal says, that is the man I want to marry. So she all of a sudden loves David. Michal Bashol was one of the greatest women to ever live. Michal Bashol does not become enamored because of David's good looks or because of David's prowess in battle. That's not going to get Michal Bashol to be interested in marrying him. If she all of a sudden, without any other indication in the Navi, all of a sudden loves David, it's got to be that she saw something profound. She saw something sublime in David, which said to her, this is the man for me. Shaul says, okay, great. Then it's time for plan three. I tried twice. I attacked, didn't work. I tried to get David to go into battle and overstep his authority by offering a Merav, then not offering a Merav. Okay, so that didn't work either. So now we'll try for phase three. So what is phase three? That's going to be Michal. He believes that David is wrong, that David needs to be removed. Or at least David can be shown to be wrong and be removed.
The other part of my question is that if David is king right now.
If who's king?
David.
He's not. He was anointed.
So that doesn't mean you're king when you're.
He's not the acting king. Shaul was still the acting king. Shaul has not been removed. It's a funny situation. David has been anointed privately, but Shaul has not been removed. And David recognizes correctly that it is not time for him to rule the Jews.
Okay. I'm seeing a lot of overlap with Lavan and the two sisters, except for, in that case, Leah also wanted to marry him, where in this case, Merav doesn't seem to care.
Right, Merav was
but
is not...
But it's the same thing, you know, you got to work for me to get this one, and then I'll switch and bait.
Okay,
you
okay.
You know, you thought you got her, but you didn't. You have to work some more, do another chore.
Okay, good, good, good. Okay, that's true. That's true, there are similarities. Good.
Shaul had the idea it was a mitzvah to kill David.
Shaul sees that David is usurping him, and he knows that the Navi said someone's going to usurp you. But he also knows that the only way that David can usurp Shaul is if David is genuinely better than Shaul. So Shaul wants to show that he's not better than me. He can also make mistakes.
But that's not a mitzvah.
I know, but we talked about this last time, that Shaul is dealing with a Ruach Ra, he's dealing with an evil spirit of Hashem, and this is what is clouding his approach. Yeah. Now we move on to Michal. So Michal wants to marry David. Shaul likes that idea. This way, I will now use Michal the same way I used Merav to get David killed in battle. But there's two problems now. There's two reasons why. There's two things that have to happen now that will make Shaul's plan work. First of all, David is not going to be so easily interested in marrying Michal because he knows what happened with Merav. I mean, he tried, and in the end, there was a technicality, and Shaul didn't let him marry her. So David's not going to go try twice. Anyway, David doesn't feel that he deserves this. David realizes this is artificial. This is not really me. I'm not the prince. I don't deserve to be. This was not. David wasn't putting this on. David genuinely did not think of himself as being the great leader of the Jewish people. He knew that he was anointed, and therefore he was fit to be there, but David felt he still has room to grow before he assumes that position. And he does not feel that he wasn't just saying the right words. These were real. David was saying, who am I? I should be the son-in-law. I'm just David. I don't deserve to be the son-in-law of the king. I'm not worthy. He means it. So the fact that the first time Shaul sort of convinced him to do it, but then Shaul didn't do it, David looks at this as a sign from Hashem. I'm not supposed to be the prince. He doesn't hold this against Shaul. He's not resentful. He says, okay, it evidently was not right. I for a minute there, maybe, okay, I thought, he convinced me, okay, but I guess not. So David's not going to go for this twice. So when the servants, especially Shaul, can't approach David and say, marry my daughter, I mean, David would say, I thought we went through this before. Right? That's not going to work. So Shaul has the servants go to David and say, you know, I think the king wants you to marry his daughter. So David says, wait, you think it's like, oh, go marry the king's daughter. Go ahead. As if it's like, you know, they just, you know, like going to the store. I mean, well, what do you think this is? This is the king's daughter we're talking about. So David's not running after this. So now Shaul has to come up with a way of getting David to want to marry Michal. That's one. Two is a way to get him killed by the Plishtim, because it didn't work with Merav. So he's got to figure this out. So he has his servants tell David that Shaul wants to see the revenge taken against the Plishtim for the 100 Arlos, the 100 foreskins of the Plishtim. Now, it's a fairly, it's a very strange request, but let's face it, it's a very disgusting request, right? I don't want you to bring me back 100 corpses. I don't want to see corpses. Bring me back 100 foreskins. Now, obviously, he has to kill them and then take that part of the body. So I want you to kill them, mutilate them, and bring me back the evidence. That's what Shaul says. Okay. Now, he doesn't say bring me back 100 arms or 100 legs or 100 any other part of the body. Instead, he says Arlos, foreskins. Where is that coming from? What does that mean? Okay, I understand that it does differentiate between Jews and non-Jews. I get that. But it's a little bit, I mean, it not a little bit, it's a lot disgusting. So where is this coming? There's got to be something deeper than that. And why does David react so positively? David says, oh, great. Oh, that convinces David. David doesn't need to be told twice. As soon as he hears that from Shaul, he goes for it. Which means that David was convinced by hearing that deal that Shaul would definitely follow through with giving him Michal. He was sure of it. There was no doubt about it. In fact, that's what happened. In the end, Shaul does follow through. So what happened over here? Shaul recognizes that this deal will make David interested. Money won't, but this deal will. Why does this deal speak to David? And Shaul knows it'll speak to David. So it seems to me that we discussed with when David fought Goliath, we talked about how David is a descendant of Rus, and Goliath is a descendant of Arpa. And we talked about how when Rus and Arpa were both with Naomi, and Naomi tells them go back, and they insist on staying with Naomi, and they cry, they go a few steps, and then again she says, go back, and it says Vatishak Arpa Lachamosa. Arpa kissed her mother-in-law and went back. Virus Dav Kaban Rus cleaved to her mother-in-law. We know that David is the great grandson of Rus, and Goliath is the descendant of Arpa. The Gemara says, Yavo ben ha Dvuka, let the son of the one who cleaved come, and let him punish or pay back the son of the one who kissed, the one who kissed him and left, of Arpa. We know that that episode was what called into question David's legitimacy, because he comes from Rus, and we know that Doeg, the great I don't want to call him general, because Avner was the general, but he was the great advisor or the great Talmud Chacham, the Av Beis Din. He was the head of the Beis Din of Shaul, and Doeg called into question David's legitimacy until it was proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that David is legitimate. But at the same time, they questioned whether David could become king or not, and yes, it was proven he could become king. He comes from Peretz. We talked about this, that the night that Arpa leaves Naomi and goes back, she suffered a precipitous fall. She had been on a lofty level, almost ready to do what Rus did. Just think about that. Rus is our paradigm of a person who is completely selfless. Incredible self-sacrifice. When we learned Megillat Rus, we talked about the unbelievable chesed of Rus that she does for her mother-in-law Naomi. Arpa was on the cusp of doing that. But in the end, she says, I can't do it. And she goes back. When she goes back, she falls precipitously. An incredible fall. The Gemara tells us that night she had a relationship with 100 men and a dog. We mentioned this a few sessions ago. And from that comes Goliath and his other giant brothers. It would seem to me that the reference to 100 is not coincidental. That the 100 men that Arpa is with, the 100 Arlos of the Plishtim, that they are related to each other. That Shaul is saying to David, I want you to go and take revenge from 100 Arlos. And when you talk about an Arla, you are unmistakably referring to the act of intimacy between a man and a woman. That's what you're referring to when you demand that. And so Shaul is therefore saying to David, I want you to bring me that 100 of Plishtim. Now, the unmistakable connection is that act that was done by 100 Plishtim, I assume it was Plishtim, or whoever, because it produces a Plishti, it produces Goliath, with Arpa. Even though Arpa was from Moab, which is a strange thing, that Arpa is from Moab, but she produces Goliath, who is the Plishti. So that is anyway difficult to understand, but nevertheless, That parallel, I think that Shaul meant to draw that parallel, and David couldn't miss it. It was clear to David that that's what Shaul was asking. By mentioning that, it sounds as if Shaul is vindicating David's existence. Because David is hearing from Shaul that Rus did the right thing in staying with Naomi, Arpa did the wrong thing, and you go take revenge for what happened to Arpa the night she left Naomi.
Raped or what?
No, it was willing. It was willing. But nevertheless, she went from being a great person to falling into the dirt with this act. And I want you to go and take revenge. So David right away says, yes, I'll do it. Because this is like putting a stamp of approval on David. Where they had called, where Doeg and Shaul and Avner, and they had called into question David's entire legitimacy, and here they're saying, Shaul himself is saying, I want you to take revenge for what happened with Arpah. It seems like he is saying, I approve of you, David. Right. So go and take care of the Plishtim in that way. And David is willing to do it. But of course, Shaul isn't really giving legitimacy to David. What Shaul really wants is David to be killed. What's Shaul's real plan? So the Malbim already explains that it's one thing when soldiers fight and people get killed in battle. Everybody understands that's what happens in battle. And normally, when there is a war and people get killed, the officers that directed the war are officers, that's all. But when an officer orders a mutilation of bodies, the officer is branded as a scoundrel. And the enemy, the enemy wants to kill that officer more than anything else. It happened in any recent war in the 20th century. It happened over and over again. Mm-hmm. Go back to any kind of situation like that in World War II, but even beyond that, in Korea, in Vietnam, all these wars, when enemy soldiers did acts of aggression, atrocities to POWs, even to corpses. But if they mutilated corpses, there's nothing like that to get the enemy, the soldiers who are colleagues of the person that was mutilated, to really have their blood boil. And that's what Shaul wants. Shaul wants that the Plishtim should recognize David. He's a scoundrel. He's a cruel, cruel person. And he's not just our enemy. And that therefore they should target David from here on in. That's what he's looking for.
But then you have the same question about why would Hashem not protect him against the Plishtim?
It's the same idea that he wants him to overstep his authority by being offered the daughter of the king, and again getting to a point where he believes that to make him feel that he's bigger than he really is. But this will incite the Plishtim against David. That's what the Malbim says. It doesn't work. In the end, David does this. He's successful, and his star keeps rising, and therefore Shaul is even more fearful of David than he was before. I think that this does do justice to explain the progression of the parak. Mm-hmm. The one thing, and I want to get to Ms. Lewis's question now, but the one thing that troubles me is, and I don't have an answer for this, is that when David actually carries out the directive of Shaul, he kills 200 Plishtim. So I don't understand that. If I'm right that it has to do with the 100 men and Arpah, why would David do 200? I don't have an answer to that question.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.